Have you ever felt like technology is just moving way too fast, especially, when you're running a small law firm, a lean operation? It's this common problem, right? How do you bring in innovation, get more efficient, but without getting totally lost in the jargon or spending too much, or worse, making the wrong tech choices? Okay, so today we're going to dive into that. We're looking at a guide called Tech for Small Law Firms, Practical Solutions on a Budget. And our mission, really, for this deep dive is to pull out the most practical, the most actionable things small firms can do with tech effectively and, cost efficiently.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, setting the stage, that the core idea we're exploring isn't just buy more tech. It's really about understanding what that technology actually does for you, what it enables. For smaller firms, the big shift is getting away from relying only on those, well, sometimes clunky old school practice management systems, the PMS. Instead, it's about being flexible, about integrating things, making sure the tech supports how you want to work, not forcing you into its box.
Tech is an enabler, right? Not a handbrake. That's such a critical point. An enabler, not a handbrake. I like that. And it brings us, I think, right to what the guide calls the elephant in the room, the law firm practice management system. I mean, for years, decades really, these were seen as the only system you needed, and providers would sort of tack on extra modules.
Often pretty basic ones, too.
Yeah. And they were often clunky, not very effective, and you always heard firms complaining about how slow the improvements were.
Exactly. And that sort of static way of thinking is what's really changing now. With the big move to cloud software everywhere, firms can now step back and rethink what they actually need from a PMS. Because look, while a PMS absolutely has to nail the core stuff, trust accounting, billing, reporting, got to do those really well.
Non-negotiable.
Totally. But lots of other tasks, they can often be handled much, much better by separate tools that integrate well. And the beauty is, these tools often work seamlessly with things lawyers are already using constantly, like Outlook and Word. It just fundamentally changes the game.
That shift, yeah, from thinking one big system does it all to more of an integrated ecosystem, that feels profound.
So, okay, if you're a firm now, maybe looking at a new PMS or upgrading, what are the absolute must-haves? What should you be asking vendors?
Well, the guide points to three really key things, that give a firm real freedom. First, openness and integration. You need a system designed to be open, one that allows integrations with other top tools.
Right, so it plays nice with others.
Exactly. And it's not just a feature, it's strategic. It gives you the firm control over your business strategy, your data. You're not held hostage by one vendor.
Okay, number one, openness. What's next?
Second, flexible pricing. Look for a model where you pay a base amount for the core platform, right? But then you have additional modules you can just switch on or off as your needs change, so you can scale easily.
Ah, so you're not paying for stuff you don't use. Precisely. And third, easy data migration. You absolutely need certainty that if, down the road, that PMS isn't the best fit anymore,
Yeah.
you can easily get your documents and data out and move to something else. It's about not having all your eggs in one basket. It protects you.
That makes a ton of sense.
Yeah.
Data freedom, strategic flexibility, hugely important. And this ties into another interesting point the guide raises: how much potential value firms are often already sitting on. Like, with their existing Microsoft 365 subscription, can you expand on that?
Oh, definitely. It's kind of amazing when you think about it. If you really maximize that M365 investment you're probably already making, it can drastically cut your reliance on those big, expensive, all-in-one PMS packages. And beyond just saving money, it opens up huge collaboration potential with clients. Because let's face it, most of them use Microsoft tools too.
Right, it's a common language.
Exactly. So that shared platform makes it way easier to plug in other tools, build workflows. You end up with a tech foundation that's actually tailored to how your firm works, not the other way around.
Okay, so we've got the foundation, right? Rethink the PMS, leverage M365. Let's get into some specific tech areas now. First up, something absolutely core to legal work: document and email management. The guide makes a big point here, saying lawyers spend, what, an average of 1 to 2 hours a day just wrestling with documents and emails.
Yeah, wrangling is the word they used. It
Yeah.
feels about right sometimes.
Yeah. So improving this, huge potential value, immediate returns, it sounds like.
Massive. And the key takeaway here is that really strong document and email management, especially when you start layering in AI capabilities,
Yeah.
that can be a real differentiator for a firm. I mean, so much of your firm's value is tied up in its knowledge.
Yeah.
The advice you've already given,
Yeah.
managing that well is critical. And just a side note, always consider migration issues if you're thinking of switching solutions here. It can be complex.
Good point.
The guide actually mentions ActionStep and NetDocuments as a good example of collaboration in this space.
Okay, useful example. Next area, CRM customer relationship management and the firm's website. How essential is CRM for a small firm, according to the source?
It frames it as absolutely fundamental. If you want to be client-centric, you need CRM.
Yeah.
It's not really optional anymore. It does a lot, right? Mm-hmm. Creating content, maybe an ebook, sharing insights on social media, drawing prospects to your website, then nurturing those relationships, maybe getting them to sign up for a newsletter, download something useful, and tracking all that engagement.
So you know what's actually working.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And the best PMS platforms today, they get this. They make integrations with good CRM tools easy. ActionStep and Clio integrating with HubSpot are the examples given. That's becoming best practice.
Right. It's all about that seamless flow. Okay. So from building relationships to actually bringing in new business, let's talk client intake. The source really hammers this home. Efficient intake is vital now. Clients just expect to start things digitally on their own schedule. And it makes this stark point. Quote, increasingly, firms that don't offer digital intake options will lose business to more agile competitors.
Hmm.
It reminds me, I was helping a family member with refinancing banking stuff recently. We were on one bank site for like 20 minutes, couldn't find any way to start digitally.
Frustrating.
Totally. So we just jumped to the next bank site. And within that same 20 minutes, we'd submitted most of the info for pre-approval, that first bank. They lost the business probably just because of that friction. It's so real.
That's a perfect example. It really shows how crucial this digital front door is. Now, intake options, you'll find them in different places. Some PMS like ActionStep and Clio have them. General platforms like HubSpot do too. But the guide highlights something interesting. Cognito Forms. It's positioned as a really cost-effective way to build web forms. These forms can even generate draft documents, and they integrate with PMS systems using Zapier.
Okay, cost-effective, integrates. Sounds good.
Yeah, but here's a fascinating angle they mention. You can actually embed client-branded Cognito Forms directly into a business client's own SharePoint site. Think about that. Your clients can instruct you directly from their systems. That could open up whole new models, like subscription services maybe. Definitely a competitive edge.
Wow. Okay, embedding it in the client system, that is interesting. That's next level integration. So practical tip then for firms setting up these intake forms, what's key?
Really think through the why. Why are you gathering this specific info at this specific stage?
Mm-hmm.
Is it just lead gen? Or are you trying to qualify the client? Or generate documents straight away? Each goal needs different info. Get that clear first, otherwise you create friction. Asking for too much upfront for just a lead, that can scare people off. Smooth experience is key.
Makes sense. Okay, moving on to document automation. The guide calls this one of the most impactful things a firm can do. Immediate time savings on creating documents, better consistency, fewer errors. Sounds like a no-brainer.
It often is, yeah.
And they emphasize this isn't some bleeding-edge tech. It's been around 30-plus years. It's well-proven, well-supported. And it's not just for simple stuff either. They mention LawHawk's automated will having over 2,500 moving parts. That's complex.
That's right. It debunks that myth pretty effectively.
So this established tech, document automation, how does it fit with all the buzz around AI? What's the connection?
Yeah, that's a great question the guide explores. What's the synergy here? Document automation is still incredibly strong for efficiency, cost, reliability, and frankly, it's a great way to avoid AI hallucinations, you know, where AI makes stuff up.
Right, the reliability factor.
Exactly. But AI will enhance it. It can help create the templates faster, maybe help with targeted bespoke drafting for unique clauses,
mm-hmm.
assist with review and refinement right inside Word, using tools like Microsoft Copilot, maybe even help with negotiations using AI playbooks down the line.
Interesting. So they work together.
They do. Though the guide notes that the document automation built into many PMS systems often isn't quite up to scratch for complex needs. For those really complex documents, MitreTech's HotDocs is mentioned as the global leader. But for a powerful, trusty, low-cost option, especially for end-to-end self-service, Cognito Forms comes up again.
Okay, good options there. And for getting started with document automation, practical first steps.
First, find your high-volume documents, the ones you do again and again. Start there. And, crucially, remember this.
Yeah.
Improve before automating. Don't just automate a messy process.
Right. Automate a good process.
Exactly. Automate a bad process, you just get a bad automated process faster.
Mm.
Oh, and they also suggest considering partnering with experts. It can actually be quicker and more cost-effective than trying to DIY everything from scratch.
Good advice. Okay, so automating a single document saves hours, But the guide then says fixing the overall workflow can save weeks. It paints a picture of legal work, often bogged down by inefficient manual steps, endless email chains, duplication of effort. It sounds like a huge opportunity.
It really is. Think about all those steps between the documents.
Yeah.
That's where massive time savings can hide. So common workflow tools mentioned. Microsoft Power Automate is one, often already in your M365 subscription. Good for simpler things, client collaboration maybe. But the guide does say it can be a bit glitchy.
Okay, good to know.
Then there's Zapier, great for connecting different web apps together. Similar sort of reliability level, perhaps. And Hivelight gets a mention that's a legal-specific tool. Focuses on making legal project management easier. Uses that visual Kanban board approach.
Like Trello or Planner, but for legal projects.
Sort of, yeah. But specifically designed for legal work. But this whole area raises a challenge, right? Workflows, unlike documents, often aren't clearly mapped out. Scoping them up front is hard.
Yeah, how do you automate something that's kind of invisible or just how we've always done it?
Exactly. So the guide suggests a different approach, more pragmatic. Instead of trying to document every single step perfectly up front, which can take forever, build the core parts of the process as a minimum viable product, an MVP, using a no-code tool.
Ah, so build a simple version first.
Right. Visualize it, get quick feedback from the team, then iterate and improve fast. Less upfront paralysis, more action.
I like that MVP approach. Okay, next up, digital signing. This seems like a pretty straightforward win, right? Streamlines getting contracts signed, less delay, better tracking.
Definitely. It's a key enabler. And you can use them standalone or plug them into those workflows we just talked about.
So who are the main players?
Well, DocuSign is probably the most well-known. Widely accepted, good integrations.
Mm-hmm.
But the guide notes, it can be pricier. And support can sometimes be a challenge.
Okay.
Adobe Sign is similar, also integrates well, especially mm-hmm. with Power Automate. And then there's Secure Signing. They're a New Zealand company, actually,
yeah.
noted for having lots of functionality, being lower cost, and offering good, accessible human support.
Human support, that's always a plus.
Yeah, and they give this great example. Secured Signing was used to bulk sign 315 employee offers during a retirement village acquisition. Shows the scale it can handle.
Wow, 315 signatures efficiently. Okay, so implementation tips for e-signing.
Definitely try to integrate it into your document workflows where it makes sense. Saves steps. But be realistic. Highly negotiated documents. You might still need to kick off the signing manually after all the back and forth. A smart way to start is maybe roll it out first to teams that will use it a lot, get that good ROI early. Oh, and for listeners in New Zealand, it's relevant for authority and instruction, A&I forms too, with options for video signing and witnessing now available.
Good specific tip there. All right, let's tackle the big one. Artificial intelligence, AI. We have to acknowledge this space is moving incredibly fast. Like, what we say today might be slightly outdated tomorrow.
That's the reality of it, yeah. Constant change.
But even so, AI tools are becoming genuinely valuable for law firms, aren't they? Contract review, legal research, even sales, marketing, just general productivity boosts. How can a small firm dip its toes in without needing a massive budget or a data science team?
That's the key question. Mm-hmm. And the guide makes an important distinction. General AI versus legal-specific AI. Those impressive but often very expensive legal contract review tools. They might need a really high volume of contracts to actually justify the cost right now, though costs are expected to come down.
Okay, so maybe not the first step for everyone.
Perhaps not. For legal research, though, platforms like NetDocuments, Pattern Builder Max, or the CoCounsel tools from Thomson Reuters and LexisNexis are mentioned as strong options because they're built on massive, curated legal data sets.
Right. Quality data matters hugely for AI.
Immensely. And for more general business research, the guide mentions LawHawk uses Perplexity. They note it could really empower junior lawyers in things like business development research. It kind of democratizes access to insights.
Interesting. Leveling the playing field a bit.
Yeah. But there are definitely challenges. Licensing models can be tricky. Sometimes you end up paying for people who aren't even using the tool. And the big one, information governance. You absolutely cannot have sensitive client information being exposed or used to train somebody else's AI model.
Huge risk there.
Massive. There are solutions emerging to tackle this, like Theta Assist, which helps manage those risks.
And it seems really vital to actually try these tools to set realistic expectations. Like you said, it's not magic yet. My own experiments with some contract review AI have been positive. They're great for surfacing points I might miss, ensuring the thing gets overlooked, but it's definitely not replacing careful legal review.
Exactly right. Think of it like a very fast junior lawyer. It can speed things up, do a decent first pass, but it's not operating at the level of an experienced lawyer working alone. Not yet, anyway.
So, crucial practical tips then for starting with AI.
Okay, first, start with low-risk uses. Things like summarizing documents, doing an initial contract review, keyword initial, always needs human checks or internal research. Second, you must establish clear guidelines for how AI is used in the firm. Include verification procedures. Don't just let people loose on it.
Good governance.
Essential. Third, for many firms, Microsoft Copilot is a sensible starting point. You might already have access through M365. And finally, probably the most important point, whatever you do with AI, make absolutely sure you're using a paid product from a reputable provider, one where your information is explicitly kept confidential and is not used for any other purpose, especially not for training their AI model. That is non-negotiable with client data.
Couldn't agree more. Confidentiality is paramount. Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground, from rethinking the PMS to specific tools like document automation, CRM, AI. Bringing it all together, what's the main takeaway, the core message here?
I think it boils down to this. Technology should be about enabling better legal outcomes for your clients and better processes for your firm. It shouldn't just be tech for tech's sake. The most successful implementations, they always start by focusing on solving specific problems, easing specific pain points.
Right. Start with the problem, not the shiny new tool.
Exactly. Map out your process. Figure out your ideal outcomes first. Identify the bottlenecks, the opportunities, then look for the tech solution. Don't fall in love with some exciting new AI tool and then try to shoehorn it into your practice. Work from the need outwards. And remember, the goal isn't necessarily one giant system for everything or having the absolute fanciest tech stack. It's about empowering your firm to deliver more strategic value to work smarter.
Yeah, and as we've seen through this deep dive, you don't always need a massive budget, a fairly small range of well-chosen additional tools, combined with that smarter approach to your core practice management software, that can give even small firms huge flexibility, flexibility to adapt, to compete in what's a really fast-changing landscape. So it really is about that pragmatic, outcomes-first approach. That seems to be the key to making tech work efficiently and effectively, especially on a budget.
Absolutely. And maybe that leads to a final thought or a question for listeners to reflect on. This raises an important question. How could your firm, maybe this week, identify just one specific pain point, just one area where a targeted, budget-friendly tech solution, maybe even something you already have in Microsoft 365, could immediately free up some valuable time or add a bit more value for your clients?
That's a great actionable question to end on. What's one simple shift based on what we've talked about today that could make a real difference for your firm? Something to think about. Keep learning, keep exploring.